In today's episode,
Google, I think, are trying to do it themselves. They're trying to make you browse less because they're putting everything on the front page. So that if you're searching flights, first thing that comes up is Google Flights to one-click book. Shopping is there to one-click buy something. Like they know that this pattern is something. I think slap AI on it and it's a different thing.
Welcome to another episode of Creator Lab. I've got a special guest here today, Ben Tosser. Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome again. Yeah,
I know. Part two. There aren't many people that make it to part two, so this is a special occasion. So for people who didn't watch the first episode, we had you on, I think, probably 2+ years ago, from my memory. And you're also the founder of MakerPad, which was, you know, the leading no-code platform, got sold to Zapier. Rhymes with happier. I learned that just before the call, so I got to mention that. Obviously, Zapier, a lot of people use that for a lot of the no-code stuff and linking different platforms to each other. So perfect acquisition for MakerPad. I'm sure like Zapier was one of the top three tools you would probably be recommending in a lot of your work. And now, in the last, I guess, has it been a few months? It's been pretty quick. You've started Ben's Bites.
Yeah, October 10th is when it started.
Damn, all right.
Yeah.
All right. So obviously, you know, this is the third episode or fourth episode I've done in a row on AI. So it is the hot stuff in the tech world right now, with OpenAI getting a $20 billion valuation, ChatGPT dropping. You know, there's been some really, really cool stuff in that space. And Ben's Bites has been my kind of go-to source for the daily roundup you do is great. And you're just a really good curator. Like, I know you did that with MakerPad and the no-code world in a different way, because you're also doing tutorials and stuff, and maybe that's coming down the line. But Ben's Bite so far, I mean, I knew you were hitting big time when I was getting it sent in WhatsApp groups from people who don't know you, and they're like, hey, you guys should subscribe to Ben's Bites. And I was like, oh, okay, that's how we know it's hitting that velocity, you know? So yeah, everyone first straight up should go and subscribe to that. If you want to know what's going on in the space, you're doing the best job of it. And so we're not going to do a whole hour discussion on building a newsletter. Like, we've talked about a little of that stuff in the past on the pod. Maybe we'll get to like your idea for it and why you've chosen this a little bit. But really, we want to go into and pick your brain around the latest in AI, all the crazy stuff you're seeing, a bit of a existential discussion around, you know, the big players, where it's going in the next year. So we'll just see how it goes. But I think there's plenty for us to talk about. But before we do that, I'm curious, what is going on with your situation now at Zapier? Because you've been there since you've sold it. You were saying you've been doing some AI stuff there?
Yeah, so I sold it in March 2021. We are January 23 right now. So coming up to my 2-year anniversary. And yeah, I'm focusing a bit on AI. So like the AI team at Zapier, there's a few of us who are looking at AI, and like the OpenAI integration launched on Zapier recently. It was actually a community built integration from Yohei. So shout out to Yohei who built that. And then the Zapier team sort of adapted it and then like put it through officially. But yeah, trying to basically see sort of an extension of the no code stuff is what else we can do with also not having to code, but introducing AI into our apps and our ideas and workflows, which I think lots of people want to do now, especially these days. So yeah, just figuring out like use cases, what we can do, how we can integrate and like do a bunch of stuff there. So I've just been tinkering about a bunch of that, but it's essentially like, yeah, evangelizing people, building cool shit with AI and Zapier.
Amazing.
Just trying to do loads of that, really.
Love it, man. And I think from my side, I can see the parallels from what you did before with MakerPad. And you know, I've also had Tom Osborne on the show. He was, I think, one of your first employees, if not the first.
Yeah, the first, yeah.
And so, yeah, friend of the show, both you guys and the NI pod that I do as well. And we did an AI episode like a month ago with him, which I think you saw that as well. And I think what you two did, when I first came across MakerPad, what you did really well was just being the face of this new emerging thing, right? Like, there's no code. People used the phrase, you know, a few years ago, that was really like up and coming, and everyone's trying to get their head around it to understand this big trend. And you positioned yourself perfectly to say, all right, we're not experts in it yet, but we're gonna become experts by learning on the job and sharing what we're learning. And then you got really, really good at it, and you made all these tutorials, and you made this membership site where people paid. So that's for people who haven't heard the previous episode or heard of MakerPad. So what I like what you're doing now, though, is, you know, you've had a big win there, right? Like, you're sitting in this nice, beautiful house that you just bought, I'm sure, with some of the proceeds from the sale. We talked about last time you had this dream of getting this cool car that you got to get as well, which was kind of cool to hear. But you're back at it, which is what I love. Like, you're like, okay, that was a nice win, but now it's time to get on with building stuff again. So even though you're still working at Zapier, you've got this thing going on the side, and I think you're following the playbook perfectly, right? Like, starting off with an email newsletter for this makes the most sense, just given everyone's, it's a really fast-paced, fast-moving area, and a daily newsletter, 5 minutes is like perfect for this. And no one really, I'm not really seeing anyone doing a great job of it apart from you, so great to see. So let's move on to kind of the AI part. So I mentioned earlier about, you know, OpenAI just got a $29 billion valuation. I think that puts them, was it 29? Did
it's pending.
Okay, all right, 29 billion. All right, so, and for people who don't know, it started by, you know, well, the head of it is Sam Altman. He used to be the head of Y Combinator, you know, kind of Silicon Valley OG. And I think Elon Musk was originally involved with it, but no longer. And they've been really releasing all the cool stuff that has been coming out in this space. A lot of it was built off the Google kind of open, you know, stuff they open sourced, from my understanding, in like 2015 or 16. So we're going to get onto kind of those players in a minute. But like, just from your point of view, you're seeing 100 times more stuff than I am. Like, how would you describe this growing space and the different categories and why you're so excited about it?
Well, I guess it kind of follows on from the no-code stuff. Like, the reason I was interested in no-code was I can't code. I'm not technical. And I have no desire to be. I don't want to be. Like, it's just, I tried code. It just doesn't work for me. So I just didn't believe that was going to be the future. And I think now, seeing all this AI stuff, like, there's software, there's stuff, like what my mum would sort of describe, like, there's something in the computer that's doing something. But I don't really know what it is. I mean, that could be software, to be fair. But
that's brilliant. It's not like,
there's something that is, like, it's designed and it's trained and it's built for specific use cases. And a lot of those use cases actually convert to, like, that's where the business value is made for a lot of people, whether that's in their own software that they've built or automations, or it's actually like a service that I'm a copywriter, I will write an article for you, then I will deliver it to you via email, Google Docs, whatever. So seeing this, like, just chat interface where you can put something in and then you get a blog post come out of it, or you put a prompt in and then you get an image come out of it, like, that is just a different level of what we've really seen in the future. Like, in the past, I think you could have had services that were like that, that felt like, felt a bit like that, but nothing felt as magic as these versions of that, which is because of where AI is. There's something in it where you feel like nothing can go back from this moment. You can't go and unsee or unexperience any of these situations. And there's plenty of use cases that are, like, stupid or, like, just a bit for fun, and plenty that are the exact same copy of as everyone else can build. But I think there's still, like, some fundamental pieces that AI will change a lot, just a lot. Like, it'll change so much stuff. I think, like, I'm usually just always thinking, what's the positive side of that? Like, and also, like, great, I don't want to do boring stuff. How do I do less stuff? I am lazy, even though I've created MakerPad, which felt like lots of, like, content, and now this Ben's Bytes email, which is a daily email. I never thought I'd do an email. I never thought it'd be a daily email, but here I am. And it's just because there's so much happening and so many new things. There's, like, I think there's, like, 150 to 200 research papers released every Monday to Friday. Which is just...
What? That is wild. And yeah, I didn't realize it's that much.
Yeah, and OpenAI, like, a lot of this, like, ChatGPT and all of that is basically based off of one research paper that came out whenever it did. So you think, okay, well, if if OpenAI is hiding in one of these research papers, some of this research, you've really got to try and look at and understand it for one, and read through all of those things, or like try and see some patterns. And I think that's where it's most interesting, is where there's like, oh, there's a new language model, large language model has come out around proteins, or it's around like, there's a specific one for science in a specific way that's built differently. It's not just everything built on top of OpenAI, which currently is mostly the landscape now. It's like most of the tools you use are using OpenAI still. It's just like they've created a different form on the front. So much. So, like, the possibility of things to be created with software now is exceptionally higher than it was before.
Yeah. And so I think for people who've never used any of the no-code tools, like what stood out to me when that first, you know, I was watching a lot of your tutorials. That's how I kind of got in touch with you originally. And you would say, well, previously you were, and I might just butcher this completely, but you're using, let's say, an SQL database on a server somewhere, but now you're using Airtable, and this is an easy way. You can drag and drop this thing and format in this way. That might be completely inaccurate, by the way, so correct me if I'm wrong in that. But you're using like Airtable as a backend versus like this more complicated stuff that you had to do like 20 years ago. And so what I'm now seeing, let's actually start talking about real use cases and examples. So I tried opening ChatGPT just now, but unfortunately the server is down because too many people are using it. But one of my really good friends, Kieran Doyle, who might be listening to this right now, he told me he saved 8 hours of work with a simple command saying, can you make this Google app script for me that does X, Y, Z? And because he'd been trying to like fix this problem for a long time, he told me, and he was able to basically fix it with this one command. And other technical people, like, you know, real coders, people that I speak to, a lot of them are saying to me they're already using, is it Copilot from what's that part
GitHub.
Of GitHub, exactly. So they're already, you know, a lot of the code they're writing is already using this kind of AI assistant. And it's just the way I visually think of it is you're typing and it's just a little boost. It's just like, oh, I'm already starting to type something, and it just fills out the next part basically for you.
Like, yeah, you sort of need to think of the AI stuff, because like, there's lots to talk about, and I'm sure we'll get into it, of like AI is going to take over our jobs. But it's more that you'll then become the, it's like you work in a sandwich. It's like you started off with the bread, you've got the idea of, I'm trying to build this thing, AI helps you build that thing, whatever that thing is, blog post, some code, and then you've got to like sort of just steer it, not too far over there, and come back over this way. Actually, it should be this instead of that. Can you change that thing or rewrite that sentence? I think we just sort of become more like conductors. We don't need to know how to play every instrument, but we know what that one sounds like and that one sounds like, and when they come together they sound like this, and you're like operating that thing. That's how I see it,
and that's where a lot of the parallels come back to that, the MakerPad stuff you did, right? Because it was giving people like me and you who aren't super technical the ability to create stuff at a scale that we didn't have before. So like moving on to some of those actual use cases, I know ChatGPT is an assistant or like a chat bot essentially. You can, how would you describe ChatGPT for someone who's not used it before?
Yeah, I guess it's like a chat bot that actually works.
That actually works, as opposed to Siri or something like that?
No, which... I mean more like the sort of bots you get on a website, you're trying to complain about something and then you're like, oh, I've got to speak to someone. Like, oh, those sort of interfaces. It's just a natural, like
the customer service ones. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But I mean,
sounds like a phone jacker. Did you ever watch Phone Jacker in the UK? There was this show, and it would be like a prank call, and you'd be pretending to be the customer service. That's kind of how it feels like sometimes. But I get what you're saying. So you can actually get real, you know, it works at a level that we haven't really seen before. But it's text based at the moment. So if you were describing OpenAI's suite of what they're offering at the moment, is there other parts? I know they've got like image-based stuff as well.
Yeah, so they've got a bunch of models, basically. So the models are the things that they've trained and worked on, and then they release those models in different forms. So it's like ChatGPT is GPT 3.5. It's sort of it's more of a marketing UI frontage of something that actually was already available that people could use. But it's just the fact that you saw a text box, you know what to do to type into a text box. So people naturally did it and have responses and can talk sort of back and forth with this like AI system. So that's what I think really made that blow up. And then think similarly with like DALL-E, when that was released a couple of years ago, it was like, was it a couple of years ago? I get mixed
this
up.
This is the image stuff, yeah. DALL-E for people who've never played around with it. DALL-E.
Yes, yeah. Then that's just, I think the reason that went crazy is the sort of images paint 1,000 words, and it's just you can type something and that image will be created. It's not pulled from anywhere. It's like, it's this thing which is just so different to what we're used to, which is like go on Getty Images or whatever it is and try and find an image for an astronaut riding a horse on the moon. But actually you can just type that in and that is what will come through. And yeah, it just like, you can change the style. You can do a bunch of things like that. And it started off quite sort of rudimentary. You can see as you're on your screen now showing different images, there's different styles and some are like more intricate, some have more detail. But these models are getting better and better. So they're like, you can have some really photorealistic portraits of people, like black and white, old people, really up front. I've seen some of those that are just like insane. And yeah, they've got a bunch of models at OpenAI and they've got embeddings, which is like searching through data. So to see and match certain things that mean if you had 100,000 points of data from your customers or from whatever, and you're like, I need to know what the top comment is or what people are complaining about on our shitty chatbot type system, you could basically use an embedding to map out some of those things and like get some results that are actually like linked and related to the query that you're putting in.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, so we'll go into a few of those image examples. But if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, I did a whole episode with Danny Postma last, it was in December. So you can see the YouTube video where he shows a bunch of the stuff that he's been building and playing around with too. The other one I wanted to bring up, because I'm a podcast person, is Whisper, which is also from OpenAI. And that, from my understanding, is more about speech recognition. And yeah. So I think the example he gave on the podcast when we did it together was you could create, let's say, a tool that summarizes, you know, hour long podcast in a few, you know, bullet points or a few minutes or something like that. Again, something I haven't really played with that much, but seems like a very useful tool. Again, none of this, like, I think for a lot of people who aren't like deep in the weeds with this stuff, you'd say, okay, speech recognition has been around for a long time, right? Like we've used, voice search on Google Translate, Siri, etc. But and there's obviously AI involved with a lot of what they're doing. But I think what we're seeing from OpenAI is because they're a smaller, on paper, in air quotes, smaller, $29 billion company, more nimble player, they can actually release all this stuff, right? And so that was one of the big debates happening at Google right now with DeepMind. A lot of this stuff they already have, and arguably from people I've spoken to, a lot of them think it's even better than what we're seeing on in ChatGPT, etc. But imagine Google released, let's play around with this scenario, right? Like, let's say Google released ChatGPT. Can you imagine like the press, that how different it would be? And kind of rightly so. Like, an example I'd give is you'd take a screenshot of an incorrect, answer. Let's say it was like slightly racist, or it was like something that was just not very good. And that goes in the press, and it's like Google, this evil big company, like that, look at what the AI is giving us. And I think OpenAI has had an advantage here where you're smaller, everyone's quite kind of excited about it. And I think for a big company to release that directly, it would have been, I think they would have had a bit more to attack them in that way. Well, but I don't know. What's your opinion on that?
This happened before. So Microsoft released this chatbot to try and be like cool and down with the kids, I suppose. I can't remember what it's called, like Tay or something.
Down with the kids.
Yeah. And it was like within 24, 48 hours or something, it turned into like this racist chatbot that like all these kids were interacting with, and Microsoft were like, oh fuck, this was not what we planned,
not what we intended. Yeah,
and it's the companies like that cannot have that kind of association with them. They can't have things like that happen. But a, in quotes, small startup that is saying, we are a research-based startup. We are testing stuff. Like, we are releasing these things so you can tell us what is racist and what is, like, sexist and what is wrong. Like, that is the reason we are launching these things. They're looking for, like,
feedback,
human feedback to actually
train it,
do these things. So that's the, like, difficult thing where Google and Microsoft are a bit stuck thinking, we can't really release these things in case these things come back to bite us. But really, I think there's an article I talked about it today where Microsoft have got a really big financial stake essentially in OpenAI. They've given them over $1 billion. And I think there's talk for some more, or there was talk. They're now looking at ways to integrate any model of GPT into Microsoft Office, Microsoft PowerPoint, and all of the rest of the sort of Microsoft suite. But again, there's still like, yeah, but what if something is suggested during me writing my meeting notes that is racist, is whatever, is like bad? There's all these things that they're having to look at where Jasper and all these other sort of writing tools are just like, this is AI. It will fuck up sometimes. That's how it is. Like, go on and do this thing. And I'm sure that Jasper and places like that always, like, they have their own training or own prompts that sort of help guide it in a certain way. But yeah, it is interesting to see it like that. And I think that's why this is such a sort of code red, or what everyone's saying at Google is a code red, because I'm sure they want to show that, hey, actually, we've got a good one,
yeah,
maybe better, and we've been working on this for years. We're better than OpenAI, we're better than whoever, and this is what you should be looking at and talking about us. But also, they can't do that without sort of self-sabotaging their ads business for a start, and then having any negative association with it if something comes back like that. So it is an interesting sort of battlefield of like startups versus incumbents. But really, is it that? Is it just like, I don't know, just a big testing field for all of us?
Yeah.
We're all the guinea pigs.
Yeah, completely. Well, I think that was a great segue into some of the stuff I wanted to talk about around Google, Microsoft, and kind of like the innovator's dilemma here. Like, that is a famous thing in the tech world where essentially, in this case, the bigger company here, let's say Google, right? Google makes 90%+ of its money from, I think it's 90% probably from search ads still, or like 90% plus on ads. I don't know the exact breakdown anymore, but maybe YouTube's taken up a bigger segment than I can remember. And the way, you know, the way ChatGPT works, or a Google Assistant would work, if you show someone an answer straight away, essentially the I'm feeling lucky button of Google, like, imagine you search on Google and you went directly to the website that it predicted would be most relevant versus going to the search landing page and then being exposed to all those ads and you choosing as a human, that is that moment where Google monetizes very, very well.
Yeah.
And now if 100% of searches were going through this, you know, or maybe not even 100%, let's say 50%, it'll be a significant impact, even at 1%, to be honest. And it was going to the direct page or giving you a direct answer, that starts cutting into that page where you're making billions and billions of dollars. And so I think that is kind of the dilemma therein, is, which is, how do we put this out into the world where it's useful, but how do we still monetize it? And I think that's where someone like an OpenAI, and I think honestly Microsoft from the outside, are really well positioned, because Microsoft Business is, one, they're getting a massive stake in OpenAI, so they're, you know, playing with them already, they're getting the upside of that investment, but more importantly, they're getting all these probably special favors, right? Like, they're going to integrate, like you said, into Office. There's talk about how they're going to integrate into Bing search, and you, just a visual search already, imagine example here we just talked about, you know, you're looking for an image to use in your blog post or your coursework at school, and previously you were using Google Images, but here you can create custom images in, let's say, Bing Image Search, if that's the future.
Microsoft they've got an image creator tool that is an implementation of DALL-E. So they have that.
Oh,
already.
Really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so it's only like maybe a month old, which is old in AI, I suppose. But it's
yeah,
you're seeing that. I mean, Microsoft are providing plenty of like compute power for OpenAI to run these huge experiments and costly experiments and everything else. But in return, they get favorable things. And like you're talking about with Bing, Bing can probably afford to do something a bit riskier because not that many people go to Bing over Google. But also, Google's been enjoying this nice ride of, hey, no one else can touch us, no one cares about anything else, even though the experience for the user has been so declining for such a while. Like, like you even said, it's put on you then to do the work. Like, I don't want to do the work. If I'm searching for something, you tell me what I'm like the answer. I'm not looking for me to then become the thing that I need to like. I've got tasks to do now. Like, I've asked you something. I've got the task now. I've gone through these three or four links, avoiding the top four links, finding out of these three or four, which one I'm trying to find the recipe. And it's actually not that one. It's not maybe this one, not that one. I just want a recipe. Which one's better? Yeah. I don't know. And if you had a more of a language model search experience, it would just tell you, this is a recipe for French onion soup, for example. So
yeah,
there's different incentives and different goals when searching, and there is a debate on like language models as a search tool versus like what it should be as a working assistant or a partner. They sort, they're all different use cases, but really you're almost assuming they're all the same thing, where you can be like, well, I just want to search for this thing, or actually I want to write a blog post, but that same thing is there for the same purpose. So it's a bit strange.
So I think that's a really good point. And I 100% agree. I think the search results page has been increasingly cluttered. You can argue about how bad it's become because we still use it versus other alternatives. The one area I'd love to dig into a little bit deeper is that philosophical question of, should the computer tell you the answer, or is it where that sandwich ends, right? Like what you mentioned earlier. So like, is it on the user to decide versus is the computer just going to tell me each time? And so like a lot of these things, I think the answer is kind of in the middle. It's rarely like black and white. So the way I would think about it deeper is certain categories of searches that might make more sense for the user to be like, you know, browsing and picking what they actually prefer, and not given an actual definitive answer around this is right and wrong. Whereas if you say, give me a basic, you know, recipe of French onion soup, that's actually a pretty easy one to say, here it is, this is how you do it, here's an image. And you know, the results page on Google right now takes you like allrecipes.com or something, and you've got like 50 ads. And you know, that isn't a good experience for anyone. So that is a kind of form of the internet we're in right now. And I think I agree, like in a few years from now, that won't be the case. There will be, maybe it'll be an OpenAI thing or Bing or Google, or someone will have a user interface for you to be able to do that in simple terms. Or maybe it'll be all recipes actually evolves and gets rid of those damn banner ads. And another example I give on a counterpoint is like travel, right? So if I say, tell me the best hotel to stay in Barcelona, that is a more subjective, you know, search. And like my preferences as a user, they can be learnt by an AI, by, you know, the search engine. And arguably they already have started to do some of those things. But this is more on, let's say we go into Airbnb site or booking.com. That is then for that user to figure out like what is best for them. So those are actually the big categories of searches where, you know, Google makes a lot of money, right? Like retail, you know, shopping and travel, banking, finance, stuff like that. So, but I saw your face there, so I want to pause for a minute and get your opinion on that before we move on.
Yeah, so I think it's a good point. I think there are different, like I was saying, there's different categories of search. It's like, I want an answer, or I want some work to be done to sort of collate and create the best answer based on a few things. So the travel is a really interesting one, where for me, I'm quite a snobby traveler. I like traveling, like I like going to nice places. I don't like certain parts of the plane. I like to make sure I'm at the front or any of those.
You're all right, mate. First class. All right. I get it.
I'm joking around. No, I just mean like on EasyJet, I want to be in the first few rows.
Messing with you. Yeah, but you don't want to be on the row right next to the toilets, what you're saying. Yeah,
things like that. So I'm just like, okay, there's a few things that I'm like, I'll always want priority boarding so I can get on and get off and all of the rest of it. So there'll be things like that, that like if you could go into my computer now, my actual assistant can go and find out, and she knows that. So she knows from future, I know that he'll only stay in these kind of hotels, likes to fly like this, blah, blah, blah. That's not a hard task to learn. So when you think of AI and all the things that it can pick up, and if it was just like in your machine, how much of that it would have seen all of the places on your calendar, would have seen all the hotels you've been to, any reviews you've given, any stuff like that, it would probably be able to pick up. And then when you're saying, give me I want to go to Milan in February. Like it knows.
Yeah, great point.
It knows that I want to stay in certain things. It knows I don't like walking anywhere. And I don't want to get the bus anywhere. I want to like be right in the middle of everything.
If it doesn't know automatically, you should be able to tell it, like the assistant, right? Like I 100% agree. This is a better version of what we have right now. It doesn't really exist in its current form, right? Like
it's just still down to you again to say, right, okay, I've got these 800 properties on booking.com. I'm going to use the filters for these things to make sure that we whittle it down to 100. And I'm like, okay, sort by price or whatever it is. And then you're like, you're going down, opening a few. Okay, there's a few deal breakers in this. This one doesn't have parking. This one doesn't have a pool, whatever. But like, again, I'm spending time having to go through that when my search history is often, I'm doing the same filters every time. And even there's plenty of sites that learn your preferences.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't your own
AI?
And this is something that I think, this is like going a bit into the future, which we'll see. But I think that you'll have your own like AI yourself. Like it'll be on your machine. It'll be wherever you go. It's Bilal AI and it'll be Ben AI. And I'll just talk to it because it's learned everything about my stuff. But it'll be things where I'm like, hey, I want a Chrome extension that scrapes this thing and pulls out these things and sends it to me every day via email. Like if there's not, there are services out there that do certain things like that, but maybe not quite what you want. There might be a developer you can hire to do that kind of thing. You might be able to automate it with a certain, all that stuff. But I think if you can think something like that and actually like the AI can create code, it's not going to be far off until it can create it and deploy it onto your machine. Like, right, I want Ben's travel bot now, and I want it to always remember that I like being in the first five rows wherever I'm going, minus first class. And then I want to be in this place, and I like hot country, all of that stuff. So you could even have a, hey, I'm feeling lucky, book me a trip. Like, check my calendar, see when I'm free, book stuff, and just like, I don't think that's that far off.
First of all, I love this idea because, I mean, I don't know if you've seen anyone making this, but if not, someone should be working on this specific use case. Because I think when you look at like technology trends and how a big thing like this comes along, normally what happens is you have like this big broad trend, but then the best use cases are like very specific. They're like niche down a lot of the time, they're verticalized. You kind of get both, but a lot of the time you get like an AI assistant for legal work and an AI assistant for copywriting and marketing and AI assistant for travel. But this one sounds so fun, right? Like imagine like building something like this where you're basically training your personal assistant to say, these are the things I like, whether that is travel, eating out, anything like hospitality in this case. And now wherever I go, whether I'm traveling back home to London, I'm seeing my family, it will already know that from my calendar if I've given it permission. And it knows the days I'm free, like you said. That is a really powerful thing to be able to actually deploy that. And that's a better version of search right now, right? Like it's not a search anymore. It's actual assistant.
Yeah, you want the action because you're only doing the search because there's probably an action behind the search. So there's a search, so then you can go and cook, like make that recipe or book that flight, whatever it is. So, and if there is an action to have, or if you're just looking up something that's like information, how much is like Lewis Hamilton worth? You could just type that into ChatGPT type thing and hope that it's created, like collating the right information, which it doesn't at the moment, but that's a sort of future state of that. And there's a few other services which do things like that and provide some sources and stuff, but it's more like hey, I'm searching for like outdoor furniture. Like my patio is this size. I want this many seats. I kind of want a bench as well as a table and like a lounger or whatever. You want to actually buy something at the end there. And I think there's, maybe that was a bad example because you, like I'd probably want to see some things in the middle, but it doesn't mean that I want to go and see like 10 websites of 10 variations of everything. And like we do this now because I've done the house so that everything's got a million variations and you're in between two, like, so I want this lamp or this lamp. It's like, I don't fucking care really. I only care that one says it's 500 quid and this one's 150. So let's go for the one because that's like, but some of those things can be programmed in. You could say, this is the style of house I like. I like farmhouse style. I don't like gray. I don't want this thing or whatever it is. I want some more character in the house. And there are interior AI and there's things like that now, but there's like, why do I have to talk to an interior designer if I know vaguely what I like? I don't know what it's going to look like because not many people do, but I think, I don't know, there's a bunch of stuff where I think really AI can do the actions or like come to you with, you're a click away from this decision already being sorted. Yeah. And that's completely what I think it's supposed to be.
Okay, so yeah, I think that was actually a pretty good example because you're essentially feeding the machine inputs and you're saying, I'm training you by telling you what my preferences are and likes. And now the output is you're going to give me options. Like you said, it doesn't have to be, here's the one table you're actually going to buy. Maybe your request is, show me the top five visually, the ones that I think I'm going to like the most. And again, I would say, you know, a lot of websites and stuff and apps already are doing stuff like this, right? Like but in a very limited capacity, right? Even like, I don't know if Pinterest is a good example, but you know, where people go and pin stuff all over the place, or I'm sure booking.com and Airbnb are using, you know, your preferences, what you've booked in the past to be able to recommend stuff. And that kind of brings up this bigger question of, again, without knowing the technical details of this, my understanding is, the part here that is really key is the access to that information. So you said earlier, access to my calendar, access to my inbox, access to my preferences that I've trained it on. And that is why I think longer term is going to be Google, Microsoft, or insert another big company plus OpenAI or in conjunction with OpenAI. That because just to be able to get access to that information is already kind of a really big part of this. And then the second part is the compute power, which you mentioned, you know, earlier as well. Microsoft and Google have that already, and so do the big players. So like getting access to that unique information is why I think when you saw, you know, when I was still at Google, I remember Sundar saying, the CEO, he said, we've moved from a mobile first world to an AI first world. And this is like many, many years ago, right? Like, and you know, they've been working on it since then, right? It's not, the whole company got pivoted in that direction. And the example I always give is the Google Assistant, right? It's nowhere near as good as ChatGPT, but the idea, what they pitched on stage was, you're going to be able to call the DMV office and make an appointment because it knows your calendar, open stuff. It knows how far you are from it. And in some ways, it actually worked. Like I remember going to a meeting and it had already pinged me on my phone saying there's traffic and we know you need to be in this place. It knows my current location and you need to leave 20 minutes earlier because there's traffic. And that when that happened, I was like, wow, this is like kind of magical. I've never seen that before. But since then, not much has really happened from the outside anyway. And so go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's all those magical things that like all these tech companies promise and say like, oh, this like this assistant in your pocket that's always going to be able to help you with everything. It's actually being able to do that and like
exactly.
And I think, like you said, Google has got my calendar, got my email, got everything, got all my search results. And Google, I think, are trying to do it themselves. They're trying to make you browse less because they're putting everything on the front page. So that if you're searching flights, first thing that comes up is Google Flights to one-click book. Shopping is there to one-click buy something. Like they know that this pattern is something. I think slap AI on it and it's a different route.
Focus on driving your business forward and leave your remote talent search to Virtual Gurus, a trusted virtual assistant platform in North America. They connect you to remote admin assistants at highly affordable rates with flexible monthly subscriptions. All of the assistants are pre-vetted, skilled, and based in the US and Canada, so you can delegate tasks reliably whenever you need the help. Whether it's one assistant or multiple, Virtual Gurus has you covered with a wide range of services, from bookkeeping and marketing support to data entry and admin tasks, to sales support, calendar management, a lot more. They also have a strong social mission to provide meaningful work opportunities for underrepresented communities, so you'll benefit from an incredibly diverse talent pool. Best of all, Virtual Gurus is highly affordable and saves you 40% on traditional hiring costs. So if you're looking for talented remote staff on a budget, book a free consult at thevirtualgurus.com/creator. That's thevirtualgurus.com/creator. Now let's get straight back to the show. And so I completely agree. The hard part is actually delivering the promise, right? Like, these are all like magical ideas. And that's kind of why, like, when we did this podcast with Trung and Jack on NIA, we talked about ChatGPT. And I was saying, like, look, this is the first time in maybe 10, 15 years where I used some sort of technology where I was like, wow, this is a next level experience. But again, I was like, look, there's a million or two people using this, 5 million, whatever it is now. I don't know the exact number. When you get to billions of people, there's a lot more stuff. One, it gets more powerful, but also there's a lot more problems and stuff as well. And so we're just very, very early is kind of what I was saying, and figuring out all these promises that they're also promising. They haven't all come to fruition just yet either. So the kind of question is, who's really in a position to deliver on this? And, you know, I get your sense from what you're saying is like OpenAI or a smaller company is probably best suited to doing this. But I'm curious on your opinion on Google, Microsoft, even Apple, Facebook, to extrapolate into the bigger companies, Amazon as well. But how do you see this playing out over the next few years with these big companies kind of competing for this next big thing?
Like I said, I think they're probably the best place to, like, if they've been working on a bunch of stuff. I think it's the startups like OpenAI that help them realize that, like, okay, this is actually more critical or something we need to implement. And actually they've done it in a different way and maybe that's helping or whatever it is. But like, AI is no surprise to any of these big companies. Like you said, they've all been thinking about it or building something or tinkering on something. It will take a lot for a startup to come in and like completely dethrone any of these massive companies, but like, it's not out of the question. I think this is what, unfortunately, feels like most of us want that to happen, just to be like, see, you weren't all powerful and like no one could take you down. We wanted a better experience, and actually this company provided it, and that's why we're all on this one. But
yeah, and that's what happened in the past, right? Like, this happens every like 15, 20 years. There's new companies that pop up. Like, if you go into the 80s and 90s, what ran tech is very different to the 2000s. Microsoft had their time, then it went down. Apple went down. Google, Facebook took over. And now we're seeing, like, you know, the problems with all these companies as well. So yeah, I completely agree with that part. What about, have you seen from your vantage point, like, Apple is another interesting example, because I was reading the Ben Thompson email from this morning, and he was talking about, I don't know if you read that yet, but he was talking about how Apple has been developing stuff, how Apple are going to be playing in this space as well. And so they're trying to make it very easy for developers to use, I guess, like Stable Diffusion or something like that on the iPhone itself versus having to do this stuff on the server side. Again, I don't know the full technical details of this, but that was just one idea that I heard. That's the first time I've heard anyone talking about Apple in this whole space right now. So I'm curious what you think of like Apple and even Amazon. Amazon also has AWS, right? So I wonder how they're going to play in this space as well with their expertise.
Yeah, well, I think they've both got like text-to-speech stuff going on. So Apple did they've got like two AI voices that sound really good, actually, for their audiobooks.
Saw that.
So there's something going on there. And I think Amazon almost in the past shot themselves in the foot because they banned like something to do with that, like AI generated voices. So they said they'll never do that. And then I think soon they'll just be like, oh yeah, we do offer that, by the way. Every book comes with its own AI counterpart. But I don't know, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do. It's not, and it's not just that big companies have to, oh, quick, let's put something out in AI. Like, let's put our AI product out. There's like every other consideration of how does our, how does this organization within Amazon or Apple affect and like disrupt or hurt that other one? And then there's that other one. And then there's so many levels of approval and all of the rest of it that I think that's the bit that almost is going to slow down a bunch of this AI in big companies. But I don't know. I don't know whether they almost start internally and they build internal AI systems and they do a bunch of stuff there. And then that's what becomes on the outside. I think the thing is, it needs to be a fairly big, like if they're going to launch anything, it feels like it needs to be a very big thing. So whether that's like AWS disrupting its own AWS side of the business with AI somewhere, like it will need to be something quite drastic that actually then does change things. I think for Facebook to say, oh, well, our algorithm now just like has AI in it, or there's content that is AI like personalized for you. I don't know if any of that's going to really matter or anyone's going to care.
That's a good example, because I guess they already do use AI in all those things, right? Like the newsfeed ads, you know, their best in class ads are all, you know, AI driven essentially, right? Well, there's AI models that like make them work really well. So it's that's kind of something you've probably heard me say on the other pod a lot, is like when new technologies come about, all of us who are really into this stuff talk about all the fancy words and like buzzwords and stuff. But by the time it actually hits billions of people, you know, people watching a Facebook ad don't say that's an AI generated ad. They're just like, oh, that's an ad on Instagram, right? Yeah. And so that's kind of when it actually hits mainstream, is where it's just an ad, but that you don't need to worry what's happening in the back end. And so it will be interesting to see how like these guys keep developing in that space as well. So just to close that part, I did want to bring up a few examples, because you'd shared this in your email. I'm going to share my screen really quickly here. This is askmybook.com. And you know Sahil, right? So maybe I can let you tell people what this is.
Yeah, so Sahil is the CEO of Gumroad, and he wrote a book, I think it was published last year, which was like, how to be, was it the minimalist entrepreneur? So how to do more with less, basically. So he then created this website, which you enter a question like, how should I find a co-founder? And then you ask it.
Let's see if this works.
Oh, the curse of live demos is happening. Oh. So then I can't hear it, but it does. Okay. It basically shows you an answer and then says, start by looking for people who have complementary skills, blah, 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 blah. But actually it also has a voice like repeating what the answer says.
Yeah.
That's built with resemble.ai, I believe. So that's like, you can train your own voice. You can just like, they give you a bunch of stuff that you repeat, and then it just has an AI voice that is based off of your voice. So you can type in anything and it can then speak like you would speak. So there's a few interesting things. Obviously, that's one of them as part of this little system. But essentially, I think a lot of us are looking for this kind of system where we've got data, whatever data that is, and we want to ask a question like to that data. Maybe I don't know how to pull out that data, or I don't want to look through thousands of lines of whatever that data is to find an answer. I want to know that, say it's in my notes or something, and I've got hundreds and hundreds of pages of notes. Where was I talking about how to be a good like founder or whatever, then having the AI pull those answers
out. Figure that out for you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually did, this is something that we mentioned earlier, which is I set this system up, or a similar one, a very basic version of this, with OpenAI and Zapier and Google Sheets. So
I'm just pulling it up on my screen while you're speaking.
Yeah. So
there.
I really wanted to because like I said, this is an exact scenario that I see over and over again, which is like, I want to ask my Google Sheet a question and just have
this it come is, out. By the way, what I'm sharing is, this is the right one, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah, so I've thrown a few like of the new Zapier tools in there. So there's interfaces, which is like in this instance, there's a form. So you type in, I've basically got data on animals, which is what's the tallest animal, what's the longest fish, things like that, just to like test if this worked. So basically put it into a Google Sheet, and then there's a text box. What is the tallest, you type in, what's the tallest animal in the world? And then there's a table that will just say the giraffe is the tallest animal. And it basically it's all done without code. Like essentially you pull out all of the data that you've got. And then with search embedding, so embedding model, which I talked about earlier, it'll use that question and search your data using the embedded model. So it'll sort of match up, okay, actually there is tallest fish in this answer. There is tallest whatever in this answer, but actually the tallest animal, like the highest ranked question and answer combination there is the giraffe is the tallest animal. So then it'll pull that out as the most highly scored match in that system. So it's a very like complicated way of saying you're going to ask a question of your data and it'll come out with the most relevant answer.
That's very cool. So just to clarify, that is actually pulling from, similar to Sahil's tool there, that's actually pulling from your own data set. It's not like just crawling the web or whatever. You're giving it knowledge, essentially, and you're letting it pull the answer, and it works pretty accurately. And so, and then the cool thing with, sorry, I don't know where my other screen's gone, but I'll pull that up in a second. But yeah, so the reason I was really interested in this is just because that to me is like a really interesting use case around, you know, I have a podcast. I'm obviously very passionate about sharing knowledge and learning myself. So I was just thinking as a student, imagine you, like you said there, like you're taking all these notes all year, or you've got, you know, notes from your lectures or whatever. And you basically create this, you know, as our boy Tiago will say, second brain or whatever, if you've got it in a digital form anyway. And now instead of just having it there and searching on Evernote or whatever, you're actually just creating a personalized search engine essentially. Yeah. And that is a really powerful thing. And I think what was cool with Sahil's thing was, I don't know if people could hear that on the audio side, but it was reading out in his voice. Which is also, I think it was his voice, right? It sounded like it.
It's his voice that's is trained on Resemble.
Yeah, and it was really, like, really good. It sounds like him. It's not like, it doesn't sound like a computer-generated thing. It's really cool. So that is really interesting. If you just think of, I know there was Joe Rogan interviewing Steve Jobs, podcast.ai example, which was quite an interesting example. But even like someone like me, nowhere near as, you know, as much content as Joe Rogan, but I've got hundreds of hours of stuff where I've interviewed people. And just being able to put that into one place and be able to like essentially search it would be really cool. And to be able to like summarize that knowledge, even for myself, just as a cool tool. So maybe I might have to play around with what you're doing there to see how I could potentially do it.
Yeah, you could just get like the transcripts of all your transcription, well, use AI to transcribe all of the episodes you've done. And then you could ask questions to it, like, what do the best makers, like, what's the daily habits of the best founders, like, from this podcast? And then anywhere there, there's sort of habits that come up saying, oh, I'm, like, I work late or whatever those things are. It should be able to pull out some of that stuff. Obviously, there's a bunch of, like, more intricate details. This is very, like, simple, ask a question, get an answer type thing. But there's actual prompting you can do. There's like examples you can actually inject in there and all of the rest of it. So there's a lot more that can be done. It's just, that's the most basic version.
Yeah, really cool. Yeah, and so I guess a lot of this comes back to what you said. It's like really in the making actually good. Like it sounds like a cool wizard hat idea, as Tim Urban would say, but actually making something give the answer that you're looking for that resembles some sort of sense is really hard. And I'll say even with ChatGPT, right, like we've talked about how good it is, there are times where I ask it something and it's not returning what, it doesn't make any sense what it's saying, essentially. But I'm sure that's going to get a lot better over time. Were you going to say something there?
There's plenty of times where it's wrong and it sounds really right. It sounds like it's coming back with a good answer, and it's just complete nonsense. But I think part of it is like the system of how it works. It's almost like it's guessing the next word as a pattern. But I mean, that sounds really bad when you say it like that. But also, if you start speaking a sentence, like the sentence I'm speaking right now, I don't know the next word that's coming out of it, but my neural nets in my brain, luckily, can form that sentence into a long-winded way of saying that's just sort of how some of these things work. But yeah, it is, there's lots of like conversation. I mean, we can go on for an hour talking about all of that, like the wrong information it comes out with and all the rest of it. But yeah, that's for another time.
Yeah. Well, and just for balance here, I do want to bring up this. There was a thread by Francois Chollet. I don't know if I'm saying his surname correctly. I'm just reading out the first tweet he wrote. It's kind of a counterpoint to all the kind of hype around AI right now. And he said, the current climate in AI has so many parallels to 2021 Web3. It's making me uncomfortable. Narratives based on zero data are accepted as self-evident. Everyone is expecting as a sure thing, civilization altering impact and 100x returns on investment in the next 2 to 3 years. And so he's written a whole thread, but the kind of gist of this was, you know, the kind of joke that we always make is, you know, a year ago, everyone who was into Web3 is now into AI. And I think it's a little bit of a cynical take, because most of the time, those people were also interested in the latest technology trends that were actually real things. Like, I've been into that stuff since I was a kid, as I'm sure you have as well. And sometimes it ends up being a real thing and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, so it doesn't mean just because someone's now interested in AI, it's because that's just a new hot thing. And therefore, everything they were interested in Web3 is no longer valid. It's just both can be true, and things can get a little hyped up, and everyone could get a bit excited, especially when they're making money off monkey JPEGs, you know. So I understand why that happens, but yeah. I feel like on Twitter, especially, I see this like cynical take from a lot of people, which is just like basically dismissing anyone who's now interested in like researching it or talking about it, which is the opposite of what I want like my Twitter timeline to be.
Same. I mean, yeah, he's a smart guy, but he, like, there's some merit in what he's saying. And I think it's no different from anything you see on Twitter. If you look on Twitter, you'll see, hey, how I used AI to make 8 figures in revenue. Here's the thread. Here's how you can do it to like I don't know, all these AI tools should be legal. All of that stuff is like
the same stuff.
No one gives a shit about that, but some people still like it and retweet it anyway. That's fine. But I think for that to be the reason why everything's overhyped, I would just ignore that, because that's people like looking for engagement anyway. But it's more that, yeah, we are in the tech world. We're on Twitter talking about tech stuff. Anything in tech is most likely what we're all going to go towards. And yeah, Web3 is like a massive burning pile of whatever at the moment. Why? It's not a bad thing for us to be looking at AI to be like, oh, this is actually really interesting. I think there's probably some good conversations to have around, well, actually, for us to actually like verify an image is real, what's good technology out there?
Yeah.
How can
it actually work off that as well? Yeah, completely. Yeah,
there's lots of things that you could always like connect the dots and everything else. But I think like there's always going to be hype when something goes as big or as viral, or there are these promises to like, hey, in the future, we'll have robots like doing our laundry stuff, which we've always said that. That's always been the thing that everyone's like saying, oh yeah, there'll be a robot, like iRobot and things like that. You're thinking there'll be one helping you. There's always that. It's just now, because there is actual AI stuff happening, you're almost thinking, oh, now you're thinking too much into like having a robot in your house. But everyone's been thinking about that for decades. So
yeah, and just to build off what you said there, I think similar to what I said earlier about when it actually becomes human behavior, you don't call it that buzzword anymore, or even like robot in this case, because I would argue like we've all got this, you know, we've got a super machine in our pocket that gives us the answer to basically any question we have in the world without all the great stuff of ChatGPT or whatever. But even just Google search or, you know, whatever, we've got the world's biggest entertainment library in our pocket, like all these amazing things that we've just got completely used to, right? And it's just like sometimes you have to take a step back and say, man, it's crazy, I can pull out my phone and talk to my parents 3,000 miles away in like HD definition, like I'm there in the room with them almost. And we've just got so kind of spoiled by all of this stuff that we don't realize how like magical it is at times. Yeah. And I feel like the same with this, like in 10 years time, if we're just training the AI to book our flight for us because it knows all our preferences, we'll just say, oh yeah, but that's just like that app, like the name of the app or whatever, because that is how it works. Yeah. You know, so it's just, I think like the kind of innovator's curve, that is what happens. Like the early adopters and innovators are the ones fielding all this new stuff. They play with the stuff when it's broken, and it gets to a stage where now everyone uses Uber and everyone uses Airbnb. But at one point, it was just those early adopters. So, yeah, just to wrap up, because I know we're going a few minutes over, so I just want to make sure you got time to get to do all the stuff you were going to do after. Let's look forward to the year, because I know both of us are not a fan of actually predicting stuff, but you did the smart way and asked a bunch of smart people their predictions for 2023.
We'll put asterisks on smart people.
Oh yeah, smart people. That's true. You had to filter through. Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, just from that exercise, were there, let's just say for the next year or whatever time frame you really want to pick, actually, let's say a year to 5 years, whatever you think makes more sense with this stuff, what are some of the things you think we're going to be seeing in the next few years in this space?
I think, well, we'll have GPT-4 coming out in the next few months, I think. And then there's like all the Bing stuff with OpenAI, like all of these big hot topics of like, ooh, what's actually going to happen in these big, like the Google versus Microsoft war. I think we'll all be around to witness that, which I think will be interesting anyway. I just think there'll be a really big push on, okay, what is factually correct? What is harmful? What is the actual AI safety problem? How do we actually make sure that we're on top of that and things aren't getting out of control? Because it's very difficult to teach AI what harm is in terms of like what harm is for me, for you, for us to chat, if we're friends and we're saying certain things, everything changes in context. So
yeah, that's a great point.
To actually like teach, but I think like it's probably all the boring things that, well, not boring, but it's like the things that you don't want to really think about too much is where I think AI will make the most impact, like curing Alzheimer's or any of these kinds of things where we need to run data and tests and run a bunch of different scenarios. AI can do it in a time that humans cannot. There's just a bunch of stuff there, I think, that will really blow it all up. And I kind of hope we see a lot of the like copycat AI little tools. I'm fine for like lots of indie makers to make all these small individual tools, like another writing tool for we're using AI. But essentially, if they're all built on the same model, every time the model gets better, the tools get better, but also there's like a smaller gap of why I'm picking that tool versus just using ChatGPT. So like, I think there's a lot there that people are building on sort of rocky soil. And I think that it might crumble when the other models get better or they release something. Like when GPT-4 comes out, it might be that, okay, now all of these startups are now redundant because they try to build certain things that was basically a wrapper on top of AI. And I don't want people to get burnt by assuming that their thing, their like AI slides tool is going to be the next big thing, when really when Microsoft just adopted it in PowerPoint and Google just adopted it in slides, that's probably 80-90% of the market share. You're like, okay, poof, out the window. So I really don't want people following the wrong path. I think looking at what research is out there, as much as it's difficult to read it, I think trying to look at like, okay, well, what does this look like? What does a business idea look like given this research? Like, does this work out? And then if so, how do we see stuff in the future? Like, I think there'll be loads of interesting things there, but who knows? I don't make predictions or any good ones at least. So,
love it. All right, that's good. Yeah, I'm reading some of the responses to your thread there. But there was this one guy, NT Chris, with a K, and I don't know how to say his name, but kind of similar to what you said, GPT-4 wows everyone, lots of false positive, reaches a steady state. This one I thought was interesting. Regulation is front and center for non-text generative AI, audio, video, pictures. I think that is a really interesting point I didn't really think too much about. I think you might have kind of touched on it earlier, but that is, if we're just talking about if that example I said of Joe Rogan interviewing Steve Jobs, that was a fun AI generated thing. Everyone knew what it was. But we're already in a place where it's really hard to know what's real and what isn't, like deepfakes. I mean, actually beyond deepfakes, just like tweets, right? Like the way we don't know who's like verified nowadays. Like it looks like George Bush has said something crazy, like the day that everyone could pay for a verified check mark. And if you just take that, extrapolate that into much more powerful, you know, personalized search engines and really good voice and video, I mean, it's going to be almost impossible just to know what's real, right? Like I don't know if there's ways that they can forgot what the word is here. I know like ChatGPT has a way of basically seeing that it came from ChatGPT.
It's like watermarking it.
Watermarking, like, that's the phrase I was thinking of.
So there's some, I think there's people making tools that are sort of there to help show that, okay, actually this is there's one called GPT-0, which is like, yeah, this is generated by AI. So there's a bunch of things there, which, and I saw a tweet somewhere, again, I can't verify if it's true or not, but someone did that and then they said they changed one word in that piece of text, run it again, and it was like it changed completely and I didn't know it was AI generated. So there's things
there. That's interesting.
I mean, that's going to be a really interesting, like, I'm glad I'm not going to do anything in it at all, because that sounds a really hard problem to do.
Yeah, completely.
Verifying all of that stuff. And that's why I think the brand of like Ben's Bites and people knowing that it's like, it's actually me, and thinking that like in the world of AI generated content and anyone can spit out any amount of content, knowing that it's like, I'm there and people are tagging me in tweets and they're going in the newsletter and there's like, it's me doing stuff. And I think the personal brands, they'll win way more in this age of AI than companies or corporates will, because people just are like, people are already sort of fed up with that anyway, and people always do that. But it's,
and they trust the person more, even like a media organization. Like now we've moved to a place where we trust certain journalists and not others, or certain writers we like and others we don't. So I completely agree with that take. And as it's kind of like, why right in the beginning of this chat I called you a curator, right? Like I feel the same way. You know, you're not just a curator, you do lots of other things, but you know, with Ben's Bites, that's how I see you. You're curating the most, you're filtering out the stuff that I should be reading in 5 minutes, not the 10 hours I could be spending every day on it. And that's how, like, how I treat NIA in a way, not investment advice, even the podcast Creator Lab. That Creator Lab's a little bit different. It's a bit more like deeper conversations, let you guys share what you want to share, but not investment advice is similar, whereas you're not going to spend all week reading all the stuff me, Trung, and Jack read, and we're just going to spitball around and mess around and talk about fun stuff. And that's why a lot of people like it. But similar on the email side, like knowing that it's not just an algorithm pulling the best stuff is actually what makes it valuable, which is kind of an interesting, funny thing in itself, right? Given everything we've talked about. I do want to ask you a question really quickly on the newsletter, but this is getting in the weeds, but I'm curious, doing a daily one is insane, first of all. Like, I know how hard it is just to write, you know, anything every day is really difficult. What's your actual process for that right now? Like, because I know you're Mr. No Code, and I'm sure you've got certain tools to help you speed things up and maybe organize things. I'm curious how you're doing it right now.
Yeah, I mean, and I hate writing and I never wanted to do any of this stuff. So it's just like, I sort of gave myself a little challenge. The first 2 days, I wrote it like long form text. And I just found it too hard for myself to do that. And I was like, I can't do this a third day and a fourth day and a fifth day. So in that case, I can't do it and I won't want to do it. So then in that case, let's cross that out. So it became more of that curated, I can add a comment here and there. And now on Ben's Picks, I go into a bit more depth. I spent a lot of time on Twitter, and luckily from doing the newsletter, now people just tag me and everywhere, get messages all the time, which has its pros and cons. I'm seeing lots of stuff. I'll save it using an automation that goes into like a notes in my notes, literally just appends the link.
Wait, just to go in the weeds with that, when you say save with automation, what does that actually look like? Like, if I tag you in a tweet, what do you do from there?
I will see the tweet and then I'll decide. I'll copy the link to the tweet that I think should go in the email. Then I will go and with a shortcut, I open Apple Shortcuts or whatever it's called now, Smart Cuts. So that then does a webhook call to a Zapier Zap. Hopefully I've lost everyone now, so they won't copy it.
I love it. No, I'm so glad I asked this question, because even if no one listens, I love this stuff. Yeah, it's so really helpful to know.
Basically, I get the contents of the URL, goes through the webhook, and then from there, it just brings out the title and description or something and puts it in. But then every day I'll go through each link again, write the actual, what is it about, try and highlight what actually it's about, and then put the link in there. So there's manual, there's rediscovery of things. So I'll save way more than I actually end up putting in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll be actually these three tweets are related. So I'll try and tie them together or something. And some things are just hey, I've done this, DM me or like this tweet to get in. I'm like, oh.
Oh, yeah, you can't be doing that. Yeah.
So, yeah, I try.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Yeah, no, because I saw you had Readwise open, and yeah, I've got the whole thing set up. The reason I say it is because I used to, well, my stance on it, if people have heard this before, probably if you've listened to Tiago I had on to do the second brain stuff, I do think it's actually very useful for people, but I also think there's a lot of people who just overemphasize and worry too much about tools essentially. And the most important thing is you're interested in doing this stuff. And there's a real human who wants to read and write something every day, right? That's the most, that's 90% of it. But there are things that really speed up your work, just literally shortcuts and tools. Readwise is actually a really good one for me, because I listen to 5-6 hours of podcasts a day, basically. And yeah. And I have this app called Snipped where I can save segments, and it puts a transcript into Evernote essentially through Readwise. So that is something that's changed my ability to really use that stuff again and save stuff that I'm not going to go through a 2-hour podcast again, but I can go back to my highlights essentially. And so yeah, it's always worth asking, because
I'm always
useful
to some people. Anything that's going to save me 10 minutes, I end up spend time thinking about subject lines, and I hate that. And I haven't figured out a solution for that, because I know that they do kind of matter, but also I can't be bothered with it mattering to me. So I'm there's things like that I'm really trying to figure out how to automate or do something with and use AI for, but it's just never quite right, I think. So I think there'll always be human element.
I did like your one from a few days ago. You used the word init in the preview text. So I was going to text you about that, but I thought I'd wait for this one just to show my appreciation.
Yeah, that was a good valuation one. It was the subject line was 29 billion valuation. And then the preview text was there's a bit much in it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, mate, the perfect way to wrap us up here. So again, everyone should go, is it bensbytes.com, is it?
.co.
.co.
I can only get the .coms in my life, so.
Oh, fair enough. Bensbytes.co. We'll link to it in the show notes as well. Everyone should definitely check it out. If you don't like it after a few days, you can unsubscribe, but I would definitely recommend honestly, even if you just filter it out and you want to go in once in a week and read the daily stuff and do that, because a lot of people don't like seeing stuff every day. I don't have many things in my main inbox that are newsletters, and your one comes into my main inbox, so that is hopefully the best praise for someone who writes a newsletter. Thanks again for coming on, mate. Where can people find you on Twitter and stuff? Is there anywhere else to send them?
Ben Tossel, TOSSEL. So yeah, just there.
All right, we'll throw that in the show notes too. And yeah, thanks again for spending time. We'll definitely get you on NIA to hang with the boys too. We'll do a version of this at some point. But appreciate you coming on, and really cool to hear all the success since we did the first episode. You got, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the name of the car, but the car, the Aston Martin that you wanted, which is always a nice, for someone like me who, makes friends through this, it's always nice to hear the good stories of you wanted that since you were a kid.
Yeah.
And you and your dad had a special, I think, moment around that. So really happy to hear it, man. And hopefully we'll get to do this in person at some time.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
Cheers, mate. All right. See you next time. Bye-bye. Cheers. Hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can also watch all of these visually, plus bonus clips on youtube.com/creatorlabfm. If you enjoyed the show, let me know what you think. You can say hello to me on Twitter. I'm at BZADI, or creatorlabfm on any other channel. I really appreciate it. It helps spreading the word with your friends and colleagues. It helps to get this out to more people and allows me to get better guests for you guys. And lastly, if you want access to exclusive content and free giveaways like the recent books that we gave out, make sure you're subscribed to the email list. I'll send out an occasional email with lessons learned from the episode. So if you're interested in that, and of course the free giveaways, who doesn't like those, go to creatorlab.fm/subscribe. Until then, I'll see you on Twitter and speak to you next week.